Yo, what's up, everybody? Thank you so much for downloading Anxiety Now. This is the new episode coming at you with nobody else except me, Jordan Rabold. No co-hosts, no fucking guests. I might bring guests on at some point. I don't know. But I am really enjoying doing this podcast alone. It has been, I think it's been a lot of fun, and it's a really interesting challenge to slowly watch my mind devolve and become insane over the course of about 45 minutes to an hour. It's really, really fun, really enjoyable. Thank you so much for downloading it. If you could, please go tell more people about it. I do this every single time in the very beginning. Go tell some people that you listen to this podcast and that you enjoy it. It really means a lot to me. Someone went and actually wrote a review, which I did not read it yet, but I saw that the review number went up, and I really greatly appreciate you doing that, whoever it is. And it was 5 stars, I assume. How about this? Go write whatever you want in the comments. Be like, I think Jordan is a lonely douchebag and will never become anything or anyone. 5 stars. Do that for me. Could you go do that for me? Put whatever you want in the box, but just put the 5-star up there, because that's ultimately all that matters. I don't even get reviews. I know I'm asking people to write reviews, but I can never understand the psychology of people who sincerely go and write reviews for anything. I don't understand it. Why do you write reviews? I have never eaten at a restaurant or gone and seen a site and then afterward been like, I need to go do homework and let people know about that. No, just absorb the thing you did. Just be in the moment. We don't need reviews. And people write reviews for chains. I can't believe anyone writes a review for a chain. How do you write a review for a goddamn fucking chain restaurant? It's McDonald's. Everybody knows what it is. Yeah. Some people would be like, 1-star experience. The cashier was fighting with a customer. That's McDonald's. That's what you get. You should only be able to review if it upsets, truly upsets expectations at a place like that. Almost like you should write a review if the McDonald's, there weren't people fighting in the McDonald's. If somebody wasn't yelling at someone. I mean, how do you even write a review of the food at McDonald's? You know what you're getting. And that goes for every chain, not just McDonald's. Every chain. You eat at an Olive Garden, you know the experience you're getting. Don't finish eating Olive Garden and then be like, 3 stars for the pasta. Dude. It's fucking trash. And actually, it's kind of delicious. Gotta be honest. It's kind of delicious. There's a reason that Olive Garden is the Olive Garden. There's a reason that it is that. And that is because it delivers every goddamn time. That should, Olive Garden, you know what you're getting? It should just be 5-star reviews across the board. The only reason you should ever write a review of a thing is if you go to the place and the waiter stabs you and steals one of your kidneys and sells it on the black market. Then and only then, to me, can you go write a 1-star review of that place. Otherwise, stop being a fucking loser, okay? Don't be a loser. Don't go write negative reviews of things. Also, aren't bad experiences actually the best experiences? Right? Bad experiences are, think of all of the stories that you tell. None of them were good experiences. Have you ever had anyone tell you about a time where it was dope? You go, I don't care. I don't care. Are you just bragging to me right now? I don't want to hear about how great your life is. I don't want to hear about that. I want to hear about the time your mom called your sister the C word at Christmas. That's what you want to hear. That's a good story. Right? Those are good stories. All the bad experiences are so valuable. Sure, in the moment, 1-star experience, but my God, 5-star memory. I really jumped right into it this time. I think I took like a minute to catch my breath, and then here I am yelling. This is why I'm also losing my voice a little bit, so I apologize for that. I'm probably going to have to take some drinks of liquid periodically, so if you hear me slurping, I am not sucking some dude's dick, okay? I'm not sucking some dude's dick. I'm just drinking from my coffee mug right here. Oh, my God. You know what I don't like is when people, they're not people, really, when, you know what's kind of unfair is that the penis is known as ugly. Is it ugly at this point? I don't know, everyone, like half the world has one. It's not really, it's just what it is. I don't think it's unfair. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, all right, I can see that the penis is ugly, but it's not like vaginas are beautiful. You know what I mean? It's an unknown hole. You have no idea what's up there. You have no idea what's up there. At least with a penis, you know exactly what you're getting. Boom. That's it. It's clear and it's obvious what you're getting. It's not fair to me that you can just call male body parts ugly. That is it. And here's how confident men are, is that we just go, yeah, you're right. It's ugly. It's gross. It's disgusting. That's what every man does. When you call his penis ugly, he goes, yeah, I know. I figured. My dick was disgusting. That's why I try to keep it covered at all times. I try to keep it covered. Like your dick's like popping out the side of your pants like, hey. Hey, I'm kind of lonely in here. You don't want to hang out. That is what a boner looks like. A boner always looks like a kid. He's like eagerly bouncing me like, hey, let's go play. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. Meanwhile, a soft dick's always like, I'm really sorry. I just need a nap. But it's not. Think about how much that might affect like men's psychologies when you tell them that their dicks are ugly all the time. That has got to weigh on us. As Owen pointed that out, the idea of telling a man that an appendage on him that he was born with and he can't do anything about is ugly, that's got to take a mental toll on you. I mean, and here, a corollary to that is that for women, I mean, if we comment on your bodies in any capacity, it's not appreciated. It hurts. Or you don't even want to be known just for that thing. Like, even if you are attractive and everyone's telling you, you're beautiful, you're hot, I love your tits, you've got a great ass, et cetera, et cetera. You don't appreciate that either. But imagine, like, I know that it's caused a mental toll on women when you comment on whether they're, like, if they're, their waist size, for example. Like, I know that a lot of women, if their mom tells them they're fat, they develop eating disorders, or if anyone tells them they're fat. I have a friend who was a ballerina, and someone, when she was 8, a 9-year-old boy told her that nobody likes a fat ballerina. 1, true. 2, it caused an eating disorder in her. And that was from a 9-year-old kid. He didn't know what he was saying, so it's not really fair to hold him responsible for that. He's a 9-year-old kid. He's just saying whatever's in front of him. They're animals at that point. Kids are, which I think I'm going to get into a little bit later, but It does hurt. It definitely causes some slight psychological pain, don't you think, to tell a man that a dick is ugly, even if you think they're ugly. You don't have to tell him that. Like, you would never tell your girlfriend that an outfit makes her look fat or that she has a bad haircut, unless it's like hysterically bad. But outside of that, you would never do that to her. So I don't see why it's acceptable for women to do it. And is it ugly? Are penises really ugly? Because you're putting them inside you. Huh. Would you really want an ugly thing inside of you? That's what you got to appreciate about gay guys, is they certainly don't think dicks are ugly. They seem to love penises. They love penises. That's why, you know, being gay is not a choice. You're born that way. Because if it was a choice, all of us would choose it. Every person would choose to be gay. It sounds and looks so much better. You're hanging out with people who already have like your similar background and mental makeup and know they're have grown up in the world the same way you have. Probably going to share your perspective better than if, you know, you're dating the other gender who is a completely flip and a different perspective on everything. I mean, who knows if that's true at all? But yeah, I think if you were going to choose, yeah, you would choose gay. If gay was a choice and you weren't born that way, like, I can't help that I am born 99% straight. You know what I mean? I love putting a percentage on it. Putting a percentage on how straight you are makes you sound so insecure about your sexuality. But you can't control how straight, or you can't control, like, I can't help that I'm attracted to women, you know? Like, I wish I wasn't. It would be so much easier and better. You wouldn't have someone telling you your dick's ugly all the time. And that's perhaps why men always want to show their penises. That's all guys want to do, is show their dicks. Everyone gets unsolicited dick pics. That's because we've been taught to be so ashamed of our penises, to the point that we desperately want someone to say, oh no, it's not that gross. whenever you do have a woman comment on your dick in positive ways, oh, best compliment ever. If you are dating a guy, even if he has a small penis or a mediocrely sized penis, just compliment him. If you're actually dating him and you care about him, compliment. Any compliment you can. Be like, and don't make it some backhanded compliment, like the one that be like, your dick's not huge, but I like the way it fits. Don't say stuff like that. Don't say stuff like that. That hurts. That, because I see what you're saying. Just say, oh, I love your penis. Don't say adorable. I don't know why. I didn't even plan on talking about dicks. Jesus Christ. I'm such a filthy person at times. Just so gross. It's everything's penis, vagina, tits, ass, all the time. Kind of, I guess it's the only thing. Just an animal. Aren't we all? I mean, I went to Yale, and so you'd think I would have perhaps a more intellectual brand of comedy based off of that degree. But hey, I don't, okay? I'm doing my best. This is who I am, and this is what I care about. This is what pops in my mind when I'm sitting there. I want to defend penises. I want to defend penises. I think if I weren't defending penises and I was a woman defending vaginas, this would be like totally seen as like intellectual and groundbreaking. But since I'm a man defending penises, boom. It's just because, oh, just another dick joke. Oh, my God. I can't stand that. I think I talked about it like 2 podcasts ago. Do not say just another dick joke. Just another. No, it's another, and you're welcome. You're welcome for the dick joke. We'll never have enough of them. We'll never have enough dick jokes in the world. There will always be more dick jokes. There can always be more, and I want more dick jokes. That's what I want more dick. I love them. A good dick joke. Mwah. You see, so many open micers will just shit on comedians, be like, oh, he just does sex stuff. Hey, you do it then. If that's what works, you do it, you bitch. What are you going to do, some shit about Noam Chomsky? Who cares? Who cares? Just another whatever. Whatever. Oh, man. I guess I should talk a little bit. I think some previous episodes, when I had a partner who shall not be named, I will not say his name because he doesn't even deserve the breath. I'm not giving him the free real estate in my brain or the free real estate on my podcast. But when I had a partner, I think he mentioned that, that I went to Yale and I worked on Wall Street, and I was kind of thinking about that and what should people, it's interesting to have that sort of background, have basically I could have been so rich and quote successful by all of these standard metrics with, you know, those two things, by going to Yale and the work on Wall Street. And I think you can even tell my apprehension in talking about this. I don't know why. I do know why. I shouldn't say that. I do know why. It's because yes, I think it's like dumb. It's a little bit of like the Wizard of Oz effect, where you see the man behind the curtain and it's just a guy behind the curtain. So you're no longer impressed by it. Other people are always impressed by the Yale thing, but you see the man behind the curtain and you're like, I went to school with some of those people. They are dumb. A lot of them are dumb. Some real dummies. Some kids I played on the soccer team. Oh my God, these guys were morons. Not all of them. A lot of them are very smart, but the guys that are really smart are always the most fun to hang out with. Like some guys, like I mean, like you guys, I'm about to talk to you like you know them, but there's like probably like half the team was extremely intelligent. And then the other half was like, yo, bro, I don't even know if you get into Florida State. And then you're like, and you're not even that good at soccer. What are you doing here? You don't belong in either place. But yeah, I was thinking about like, you know, sometimes I feel weird that I went to, to Yale. And then I worked in that, I worked on Wall Street, and I don't really share that information readily. And the reason is because then people treat you differently and you want to be treated like a person, but they almost like a, God, I don't know. They'll be like, oh, you must be so smart or so bright or something like that. And you're like, I don't know, man, whatever. I don't think I am. And then also where I am in my career. I mean, it's gotten better every year and it's gradually getting there. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. But you're like, yeah, if I were smart, wouldn't I not be more successful than I am right now? Would I not have more money if I were smart? Would I not have more respect and more accolades? Would I not have a writing job? Now, granted, in the thing I'm pursuing, there's so many unpredictable and tangible elements to it that you, and uncontrollables, like you can't help what the zeitgeist is, and you can't help what, like, quote, I don't know, I hate saying stuff like this, but like industry or something like that is looking for. So perhaps that success will come when you're overwhelmingly phenomenal, and as like say Bill Burr has said, when you're completely undeniable. And that's always what you're working toward, is just being undeniable, where the point where you get on stage and whatever thing you're creating is truly fantastic instead of just really good or good, depending on your perspective and how on you are that night. But when you're really undeniable and you can go on stage and just murder, you know, to the point you need to be at this, you need to be so good that after a show ends, people don't leave you alone and then they go and tell 10 friends. That's how good you need to be. That is like pretty much the standard, and that's the only standard to ultimately be successful. Now, there are people who are successful and not that good. And as I have joked, I would love to be one of those people. But I think given my demographics, I don't think that is happening. I don't think that's going to happen for white straight males for a little bit, even if they are yoked out of their minds, you know what I mean? Even if they are fucking jacked like I am, I don't think it's going to matter on that front, at least in what people select for. But on one hand, it's frustrating not being successful, but on the other, I am proud of myself because I at least am pursuing something I'm truly interested in, truly passionate about, and different than what most kids with my background, I guess we're not kids anymore, but with most people with my background would do. Like most everyone, all of my peers, it's super sad, actually. It's super sad what most Ivy League graduates do, because here's a group of people who are, now I know I said like half the kids were dumb and half weren't, but the difference is that all of them do their homework. That's the thing that really separates Ivy League kids from other kids, that every kid turns in papers. Every kid shows up to class more often than not. Every kid will get the thing done, and it will be done at least competently. The rest of the world, not so much. Seriously. Most people don't try at anything. These kids actually try. But here's what's sad about so many kids that go to Ivy League schools, and I am so sorry if this is boring you, but I think it's an interesting point, is that they end up here are bright, intelligent, generally financially well off, or at least from middle to upper middle class and super rich kids who have borderline every opportunity at their fingertips just by the sheer fact that they have that degree, and yet all of them, or a majority of them, go into some of the most boring careers possible. They work at finance, they consult, or they go to law school. Now, there are interesting areas within all of those. I understand that. And there are some people who are built for those sorts of careers. I understand that. But by and large, those are not creative fields. Especially, I worked in finance, and that isn't, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck who you are. If you say you're interested in finance, you're fucking lying to yourself. You are lying. You're a fucking liar. You're only saying that to make your conscience feel okay with what you're doing. I don't think finance is evil, but I think it's boring. I think it is boring. The only reason that you say you're interested in it is because you can make copious amounts of money doing it. Because the reward is great, that doesn't make the work itself interesting. But you delude yourself into thinking it's interesting because the reward is great. Here's my argument for how I know none of them are actually interested in finance. If the job paid 50 grand a year, would you still do it? If the answer to that question is no, then your job blows and you are a liar. You're a liar. You're deluding yourself. You're lying to yourself, your friends, and your family. That's a fact. Now, here's why it's bad to go into those careers. I'd almost exclude law. Now, there's because I would say there's branches of law that are super interesting. They're super interesting, super valuable. You can become like an immigration lawyer and advocate, do like public advocacy. You could do my older brother does. You could work at the DOJ and prosecute white collar crimes. That's awesome. Putting rich people, rich fucks who steal from us in jail. That is an admirable thing to do. That's a great use of a law degree. Now, if you're just going to go do work for Nestle and try and command and try and like grant them more water rights, you're a douche. Okay? You're kind of a douche. All you care about is your bottom line. All you want is to have money so you can buy more shit. You're a loser. But it's a huge brain drain. It's a waste. Here are these really incredibly talented kids, and they're going into ostensibly boring careers because the rewards for those careers are too great, and also the respect you get from those careers is too great. Nobody ever will call you a disappointment if you work at Goldman Sachs. Nobody's going to call you a disappointment. I will, but nobody else will. I will call you a disappointment, but nobody else will. And it's a waste. It's a waste of some of the best and brightest people. Then these schools are their parents in our country are investing in. Because they could be doing literally anything. They could be doing anything. And then the reason, and I'll admit this for myself, because I worked on Wall Street for 2 years. And the reason that I chose those careers is simply because of a lack of creativity. And because I was a coward. Those are the two reasons. Lack of creativity and cowardice. Those are the only two reasons that you work in those careers. Because you're afraid to go out and actually make something happen. You're afraid of that. You know that if you just follow this path, you will get this reward that will accord you this respect and this lifestyle. You're a coward. You're an uncreative coward. That's it. No way around it. You're a coward. You go to business school, frankly, you're a coward. That's how I feel. Business school is for cowards. It's for people who want to move up the executive ladder, but they don't want to actually take the chance to run their own business. They just want to climb the ladder. They want to get their 400 grand, 350 grand in their stock options without actually putting any skin in the game. You don't need to go to business school. What a waste of money. You want to know how you learn how to run a business? You run a business. That's how you do it. I know more about business. I fucking run a full functioning comedy tour. I know more about business than probably all of the Harvard business graduates, unless there's someone who has a startup. But then if you had a startup, you wouldn't go to Harvard Business School. You wouldn't. I know it's a waste. I think that going into those careers, it's a waste of intelligence. It's brain drain. And it just sucks because the rewards for those things are too good that it's difficult for kids to turn down. It's difficult when you come out of college to know that to have that level of stability and security, it's difficult to turn that down and then try and do a thing you actually are interested in. That's it. Because I remember when I first went to Yale, when I was 18, all the kids, they had grandiose ideas of who they would become and what they wanted to do. They had a vision. They had a passion. And then, for some reason, senior year rolls around and they realize they're going to need to get, quote, a job. And so they get the job that everyone's supposed to get. It's sad. What a waste. What a waste for everybody. And it's because I think part of it is also because it's hard to think about what you really want to do and who you really want to be. Those are super challenging questions to answer. Those are difficult things to figure out. And I feel silly at times when I'm like doing something really, really dumb. Like I opened this podcast by talking about dicks. And you kind of go like, I went to Yale? Why? Why? I guess it's why? Why? Why any? I don't know. I can't answer that. But so what should you do after college? I would say something interesting. That's what you should do. You shouldn't just go into those careers just because they afford you money. And like, finance is so boring. It's so boring. It's so boring. It's a lie. I'm specifically talking about finance because that's the world I worked in. It's boring. It's a lie. I worked in investment banking, so that's where you just raise money. You raise capital for giant corporations like AT&T. But like, here's the thing. You're not doing anything interesting with that money. AT&T, you're refinancing giant $500 million loans. They're going to have to do it because they're not going to pay $500 million. So just every X years, you get X money as a bank. And if you're the managing director, who gets it. And that's a super boring thing. You shouldn't have smart people doing that job because that job doesn't require smart people. That job requires processors. It should almost be automated that they're going to refinance that loan at this rate. It's borderline should be automated. It's a waste of intelligence for smart people to do that job. It is. Point blank. And then you go, okay, so who is smart? So what job in finance should smart people do? And you go, should they work at hedge funds? Should they work at private equity shops? Those are just people who stake a position in businesses and say, this business is a good idea, and so we're going to give it money because we believe it's going to be successful. Now, that's a more interesting job than investment banking, no doubt. But also, no hedge fund has ever outperformed the market over the course of 20 or 30 years. No hedge fund has done that. They haven't done that. So are they adding any value? And most of them make their money off of investing fees, off advisory fees, by just taking anywhere from 1 to 10% of people's money. For what? Holding their money and putting it in a place and then ultimately not doing as well as an index fund does? Get the fuck out of here. Suck my dick. Seriously. So you're really smart, but you're just playing a game that is effectively chance and that you're losing to just leaving the money in a block to go as the market goes. It's crazy. So yeah, also dumb. Also dumb. I guess it's smart that you're deluding people, you're tricking people into giving your money for that, but then you're adding no value to the world. You're just taking. So what should you do after college? I don't know. Whatever you think would be interesting. What should you do with your, whatever you think would truly be interesting and whatever will actually challenge you. I open this up by saying I'm a loser. I am a loser. Total loser. I'm a total fucking loser. But how freeing is that? What a freeing sentence to say I'm a loser. The most freeing thing in the world. Because once you say, yeah, I'm a loser, nobody can hurt you after that. You just go, yeah, you're right. I am a loser. I'm unsuccessful. I have nothing going for me. What now? Nothing. You've accepted it. You've taken the power away from anyone else from calling. You'd be like, yeah, but you're a loser. You're right. I am a loser. And I'm fine with it because I'm trying to not be a loser. You just got to go full loser. That's it. You got to be willing. If you want to be great at anything, you got to be willing to go full loser. Don't worry about what other people think of you. It's really hard. It's really, really hard. It's really, really hard. And you know what? They will mostly be jealous. Other people will mostly be jealous of you for what you do. They will be mostly jealous that you're taking the chance and that you're willing to embarrass yourself and fail. It's like, you ever, okay, I'm a white person. You knew that probably by my voice and from pictures of me. I am a white person. For so long in my life, well, and as a white person, dancing is not an important part of our culture. Not a lot of dancing for white people. I don't know why. We don't really dance. We don't. We don't really dance. It's weird. If you ever go to a Catholic school, an Irish Catholic school dance, 6th, 7th grade, there'll be a line down the middle. Girls on one side, boys on the other, nobody in the middle dancing. And that is because the kids are nervous and scared to dance because they're afraid to look dumb. Now, that apprehension and fear stayed with me for a very, very long time because I felt like I wasn't good at dancing, so I didn't want to get made fun of for dancing. Because the thing, you're never even going to get proficient at dancing if you don't dance. And once you start dancing, sure, you might be the first guy dancing in the middle of the dance floor, and everyone is probably going to point and laugh, or maybe even make fun of you and be like, hey, look at how awkward that he is. But then over the course of time, you'll stop being awkward because you'll start being comfortable. So you'll relax and you'll be able to truly move your body, spoken like a person who sucks at dancing, but has fun now. And then people don't care. They just appreciate that you're trying. So yeah, I don't know if that metaphor tied it all up. May have gotten lost in the beginning, but the point, just dance like nobody's watching. God, I wish I had my voice back. I really need it back for this weekend because I have shows this weekend and I do not want to be losing my voice during them. I just want to have my voice. God. Wow, that was heavier than I thought and took up way more time than I expected. I hope you found that at least somewhat insightful. Who knows, you know what I mean? Because that's what the hard part about doing this podcast without anyone here is that as you're talking, you can't gauge interest and you can't gauge reactions and you have to keep the train moving the whole time on your own. But hey, that's the real challenge. I was talking to a... I was thinking about what, like, as a kid, like, you ever play, like, night games? That was, like, the most fun when you're a kid, playing night games. And when you actually got all the other kids bought in to the point everyone was trying. Because there would always be, like, some kids that were too cool to try who were like, no, I'm not going to play. God, I can't even remember that. What's the game where there's, like, half the house, one side is on the, like, Jailbreak or something? You couldn't get people to try it Jailbreak. And you know what's funny about those games? There was no way, and so many of them, I guess you capture all of the other team, but there's also like no way to really win, right? Like the games just go on. They just go on until like someone's like, I got to go home. That's how most of the night games worked. Is they just, oh, capture the flag. That's the one I was thinking of. I guess you can win and capture the flag. That's not true. But so many of them just, it seems like, there's not like a hard and fast winner, or winning is so difficult or would take so long you'd have to play for like 9 hours. And nobody does. But there was one night game I remember playing and it was so fun. I hope other people played this, but German Spotlight. I don't know if you remember German Spotlight, but that game was amazing. And we'd always play it at, my friend Max's house. He actually passed away. It's really sad, but... We would always play at his house this game called German Spotlight. And it's because he had this deck from his house that was like high up and then it would like overlook his backyard, and in his backyard, like all these bushes and stuff you could like hide behind. And the objective of the game was there would be a bunch of people that would start really far away from the house or from the high up point, and they would try to sneak their way down to the house and then like touch the front of it without the spotlight person shining the light on them and calling them out and saying, "I see you, Jordan," or whoever it is. That was your objective, is to not get caught in the light. So that person would be up there with like a big flashlight. That game was so fun. But my God, what an inappropriate name for a children's game. I love that about children's. There's no like, you have no idea of political correctness. This game is called German Spotlight, that means that the person with the spotlight is a Nazi, and the people down below are Jews, and they're all trying to work together to escape. That's what the game's title is. German Spotlight. That's a German guard, and those are Jews that are in a jail, and they're trying to escape without the guard spotting them with the spotlight. Didn't even think of that until now. I didn't even think of that until now. How wildly inappropriate that title for the game is. But what a fun game. What an enjoyable game. German Spotlight? Are you kidding me? I wish as a grown-up you could play that stuff. The older I get, the more that all those boring aphorisms are true. Like, youth is wasted on the young. Oh, my God, it is. I'm 30. I'm not even that old. I'm not that old. I'm on the cusp of my body degrading. I'm on that cusp right there, that point where, like, you still got a little bit, but you kind of don't. Starting to get a little sore. You go work out. You have a little less in the tank the next day, even though you're fighting against it. Youth is wasted on the young. So true. Because they don't appreciate childhood. How incredible being a kid is. Like, around the age of... Being a kid is fun, and then you hit puberty, and that sucks. And then after puberty is fun, again, like when puberty ends, then it's fun. And then you graduate from college, or you become like 26 on, it starts becoming less fun again. Because you start playing for keeps. Because when you're like 22 to like, I'll say 28. 22 to 28, you're not playing for keeps yet. You can still feel it out. You suck at whatever you're doing, or you don't have picked a career yet, or all that. You haven't done any of that yet. It's totally cool. It's totally cool if you're not successful or things aren't going that well. You go like, oh, okay, I'm 24. You know what I mean? At least I'm not 30. And then you turn 30. I remember when you're 24 and you would judge 30-year-olds. You'd be like, what a bunch of losers. Those 30-year-olds. And then you turn 30 and you're just like them. And you're like, oh, no, it wasn't that bad. They weren't that bad. He was just a manager at Starbucks. That's the best he could do. That's not that bad. It's like one step away from being the manager at Starbucks. It's kind of how your perspective shifts. But yeah, kids, they don't even get how dope it is to just be able to go out and play a game like that for hours. And I walked by a basketball court and I was like, when's the last time I just shot hoops? And I work out, but that's like objective, has an objective of like fitness. And I have fun doing it. I enjoy it. And that's because there's like something off in my head. I know that. But, like, yeah, kids, they don't appreciate kids. They don't appreciate being a kid. They don't get how awesome it is. It's so awesome to have no sexual impulses. Amazing when you're a kid. I'm very minimal. All right. Weird sentence. I agree. Weird statement. But can we just get like when you're 10, you don't want to have sex, and thank God you don't, and nor should you, and nor should anyone molest you. But it's so nice not having those impulses. I remember turning 13, 14, 15 when like you started actually getting boners and erections, and they made you feel a thing. It's like, ugh, it's another like beast you have to satiate inside of you. And this is not just a male thing. I know women have it too. So don't fucking get all weird on me right now. Right. But yeah, being a kid is amazing, and they don't appreciate it. They have you have no bills. You got a little schoolwork, but who cares? And you do bad on it. It doesn't really matter as long as you actually are smart. I mean, I think you're building the skills to be able to accomplish stuff and follow things through and do work. But like, you get a C in English, fuck it, who cares? You get a C in math, fuck it, who cares? You're not even good at stuff. Like, being well-rounded in this world now doesn't matter. It only matters if you're extremely good at stuff. That's all that matters. If you have like one skill, but you're autistic otherwise, but you do that one thing better than everyone, that's almost more valuable now than being well-rounded. It makes you a worse person probably, and you suck to be around and you're not interesting, but you'll be rich as fuck. Kids, don't appreciate the leisure time. Being a kid is only leisure time. It's pure leisure time. And then they don't appreciate, so they don't like try in school, which I know I said doesn't really matter, but they don't try in school, or they don't see that they have the opportunity to learn as much as they want. They don't see things that way. So here's what I propose. We shift these child labor laws. These child labor laws are too strict. Let's loosen them up. You start walking, you start working. You get in the coal mine. You know what I mean? You get in the factory. You got little nimble fingers. These kids can put stuff together. None of them could be managers, sure. None of them could be the brains of the operation, sure. But we could use them as just as the dumb workforce. They can just do all the dumb manual labor. Why aren't we having kids? And, you know, you team up eight kids. That's probably as strong as a man. A single man. Or woman, yeah. That's probably eight kids who I carry the equivalent that a grown man could carry. They'd probably cry a little bit, but, you know, whip them into shape, yell at them a bit. They'll do it. And then, so kids work manual labor from about the age of 3 until, say, 14. Let's go 14 years old. From the age of 3 until 14, they work hard manual labor. And then at the age of 14, we're like, okay, cool. Now you can go to school and you can learn. And you can prepare yourself to be a part of the world for real. If we ran things that way, every single kid would study so hard in school. Every single kid would learn how to read so quickly. They would learn all the math they could because they'd understand how horrible it is if they don't. These child labor laws are way too lax. They are. College? Oh my God. No one would skip class because they'd be like, all of them would wake up and they'd be like, oh, they'd sleep in until 8 a.m. And they'd be like, I remember when I have to get up at 5 a.m. to go work at the net, to go shovel coal. I don't know. This is kind of a good idea. We need to loosen these child labor laws, you know. Loosen the child labor laws. This is an untapped, cheap workforce. You could get kids to work for Skittles. Pay them in Skittles. Don't worry about giving them actual money. Pay them in Skittles. Boom. I am a genius. This is the only insight you can get. You can only get this insight from someone whose mind is as agile and nimble as mine. This is the only place you can get it. I like the idea of someone listening to this and thinking I truly believe that. And I'm not just being bragging is funny to me. Bragging and acting like you're the shit is hilarious to me. I think it's so funny to just like talk about how jacked you are and ripped and smart and intelligent and insightful and funny. It's so funny to me to be just a braggart. One thing I'm grateful for is the fact that I am not going bald. Wow. That is it's so unfortunate that some people go bald and some people don't. Man, if you're a man and you're going bald, like, I feel for you because you look, it ages you. Just if you don't have hair on your head, you look 10 years older. You do. If you're holding on to your hair. And now if you go Bruce Willis, you're good. But Bruce Willis, you know, he kind of looks timeless now. Like, he hasn't aged in 25 years. He looks the same because he's embraced that he's going bald and has just shaved his head down to nothing forever. And he embraced the baldness. But if you're kind of like holding on to it and you're fighting that good fight, give up, bro. Raise the white flag. Now, here's Here's what every guy with hair, and I am a guy with hair, says to every guy who is balding, is we always talk about how if we were going bald, we would shave our hair down the second we saw it. Now, the fact that every guy who is going bald doesn't do that makes me believe that we wouldn't. We would all hold on to our hair for as long as we can. And it's got to be so frustrating for guys that are going bald to hear men who, like, this is based off of, so we were out hanging outside of a comedy club. It was me and three other comedians and then one other comedian who is going bald. And it's going bald fast on him. It's disappearing. He looks like Doug Stamper. His name is Rob Stocky. Funny dude. Good friend of mine. But he looks like Doug Stamper from fuck, that Netflix show. What's it called? The Kevin Spacey Netflix show. Whatever. House of Cards. And I'm going to call it the Kevin Spacey show because that's what it is. But so we're all talking about, like, we're talking about going bald, and like, all of us have hair, and we're like, yo, bro, second I start going bald, it's gone. We start doing that to him. And he goes, yeah, of course you say that because y'all have a great head of hair. Easy for you to say. And it is easy for us. It is. It's so easy for us to say what we would do in that position, but we're not in that position. He's like, imagine watching yourself. Like, it's proof that you're getting old and that your looks are fading. That's what it is. And what sucks about going bald is that you can't control it. It's an uncontrollable. It happens. It just happens to you. Sure, there's medicines and creams you could take, but those things have horrible side effects. Like, I think that isn't like Propecia, one of Propecia's side effects that it stops your baldness from happening, but then also it can cause erectile dysfunction. And I mean, sure, you have a head of hair and women want to have sex with you, but you can't do anything with your piece. So what's the point of the hair? The hair means nothing then. It can cause like depression or something, but you're already depressed because you're going bald. So now you're going to take the medicine, you'll have hair, but you still feel depressed. Not worth it, bro. That ain't worth it. I think going bald, the way going bald should work is that it should be a thing that you deserve. Like, if you commit crimes or you do something horrible, you start going bald. Now, if you're a good person, you have a full head of hair. But if you're kind of a real piece of shit, like a child molester, wouldn't it be nice if child molesters went bald? That would be nice. That would be nice because then we would know who the bad guys are and the good guys are. You would just look at someone's head. You'd be like, oh, you're an asshole. How do I know that? You're going bald. You probably yell at taxi cab drivers because they don't take a perfect turn when you want them to. That's why you're going bald, dude. You deserve it. And if you're going bald, that's always the first insult people throw at you. People are vicious. People are vicious to bald people. They just called you a, like, if you cut someone off in traffic or have that kind of interaction or something, some sort of rude interaction, or even if someone else is rude to you, they'll be like, shut the fuck up, you bald bitch. That's what everyone always talks to bald people like. They immediately point to their flaw. And unlike other things, it's not deserved. They didn't do anything to get bald. They didn't do anything. Like, if someone is fat, now we're getting into fat shaming territory, they kind of did something. They ate the food. They put that in their body. Now, there's a variety of reasons, and I know you're like, yeah, but sometimes they can't help it. You know what? Let's cut the shit. You can help it. You can help it. You can help it. There is a point in time, and this goes for everything. This goes for literally everything. There is a point in time where you have to be responsible for who you are and what you do. Now, there is a point in time where everyone's a product of their environment, but then you reach a certain age where you're old enough that you should be a conscious, self-aware human, and you should go, I understand that this was my upbringing or these are my circumstances, but I am not going to be completely a product of my circumstances. I am going to overwrite my software and have new software. And that is whatever with food, I guess. I don't know. Kind of lost steam in that last. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You know what's so funny to find out? If you're a person who takes care of yourself, I will tell you this. Exercise, does not matter. They say, like, abs are made in the kitchen. 100%. 100%. Bro, abs are only made in the kitchen. Abs aren't made anywhere else. Nowhere else. You don't get abs in the gym. The way you look is 90% food, 10% exercise. That's why I hate shows. I fucking hate shows like The Biggest Loser. That show fucking sucks. It's a bad message to send people. I understand these people go through transformations, and if you watch that show, it's going to make you cry. It's going to make you tear up, because you're going to see someone go from like 300 pounds to like 140 pounds in the course of 4 months or whatever the time frame is. It's an incredible transformation every single fucking time. But they do everybody a disservice by acting like the way they lost that weight was through hard physical work. Now, physical work is hours on the treadmill, hours on the elliptical, push-ups, pull-ups, all those things. Those things, yes, those do help. And you got to burn more calories than you put in, but it's so much. It's really food. It's food. It's all food. But that's not an interesting show. It's not an interesting show to show people eating different food and saying they stopped eating cupcakes and now they're eating just chicken, rice, vegetables. That's not an interesting show. That's a boring show. So they just show these large people just grinding it out and having a trainer yell in their face and be like, "You want to die young or you want to hold your kids?" What a disservice to everybody. Make it look like that's what you got to do to lose weight. No, it's a lot easier than that. It's go to the grocery store, buy chicken, don't fry it, side of broccoli, side of rice, eat that in borderline whatever proportions you want. You can eat as fucking much broccoli as you want, and you will not get fat because you'll get full beforehand. You can eat so much chicken. I swear to fucking God, you can eat so much chicken. And you will not get fat. You can eat a lot of rice, depends on how it's cooked, but if it's just boiled rice, you can eat so much rice and you will not get fat. It's all the processed stuff. They do you such a disservice on the shows like Biggest Loser. That's a terrible show. It's a terrible fucking show because it's lying to people, it's deceiving them, and it's making them think that weight loss, the only way they can achieve it, is with the help of Jillian Michaels. Bruh. You don't need Jillian Michaels. You don't need her. You don't need her at all. It's not going to be this miserable, arduous thing. You need to just rewire your taste buds a little bit. You're not going to be able to go out to eat as much or eat delicious, quote, delicious food as often. You know what? Fuck it. You're not going to be able to eat delicious food as often. It's a fact. It's what it is. The things my taste buds crave, I don't get to have as much. I don't get to go to Taco Bell. I don't get to eat McDonald's. I don't get to eat Wendy's. I can't eat Chipotle all the time. I don't get to eat that kind of stuff. I don't get to eat cupcakes. I don't get to eat cake. I don't get to eat pizza all the time. You can still eat that stuff some of the time, but not all of the time, which frankly, you eat it all the time if you're large. You do. I know. And there's a lot of reasons people do it. There's an emotional reason. There's an upbringing reason. There's a habit. But the reality is that stuff's getting eaten. But you don't get to eat it. You change what you eat. That's it. You want to lose weight, you change what you eat. That's it. You want to look good naked, you change what you eat. Is this a comedy podcast? I don't know. I can't answer that for you, okay? You tell me. Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus Christ, guys. Well, here we go. Let's start wrapping this bad boy up. Thank you so much for listening. Seriously, it means a lot to me. If you could, go leave a review on iTunes. 5 stars. Write whatever you want in the box. And if you could, go check out my website, jordanrabel.com. I've got my show dates up there. I don't know if I've updated them in a little bit. Or you can follow me on Facebook. Look up Jordan Rabel on Facebook. Friend me there or follow my comedy page. And I literally have all my dates on my comedy page. Every place I'm going to be is just popped up on my on that page. And you can easily track. Come see me. If you're coming to a show, seriously, message me or tweet at me beforehand. Fuck it. I'll give you free tickets. I don't give a shit. I want you to just come to shows. That's it. That's all I care about. I want you to come to the show. I want you to laugh. And then I want to talk to you after the show and have fun. Does that sound good? Also, one last thing. Hit that subscribe button. That would mean so much to me. I would love it if this was automatically downloaded to your thing. So you don't have to go search for it or follow me on wherever the fuck you see it. You don't have to get on that social media, have that time wasted. Because, you know, every time you open up any app, you end up getting distracted and you end up spending another 20 minutes on your stupid phone doing shit you don't need to do and you shouldn't do. So how about this? Just have it downloaded to your phone directly so you can just get it right away. Okay? Anyway, thank you so much. I'm going to put this out right now, and I will talk to y'all next motherfucking week. Thank you for listening. I love you. Goodbye.